You're never going to do a podcast.
No, but I let those the returns you wanted to give to Bobby, the Canadian ones.
Yeah,
out of the package. So I'm glad I went back in there.
Oops. Blame Canada.
Okay, now we need to move quickly.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Speed read.
Oh, no. Speed read.
No pressure, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I'm Liz Heisey with Women Exhibitors, talking on Stamp Show here today.
It's hard to send up. It's hard to send up.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, podcast number 20. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, Tom, Danny, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news, tops, coins, and stamps. Hashtag stamp stories, USPS versus The Onion, and our expert topic of the week is first day covers. So joining us today is Danny, who's going to talk about the new Topps cards that introduce coin collecting and stamp collecting and sports on a single card.
Well, Topps has done it again, and with flair this time. In an attempt to add value and interest to their line, Topps has released a new series this year that combines a birth year coin, stamp, and baseball card in one package. These new items do look really nice from a collector's perspective. But it might already have a major flaw. Then again, it might have uncovered an incredibly rarity in the stamp world. I very seriously doubt it, but we'll see. The concept, while fun, is already raising eyebrows because some of the stamps Topps are using never existed. Many of us are familiar with a 20-cent stamp featuring President Roosevelt from 1982, Scott catalog number 1950. However, Topps, who printed directly on the card genuine U.S. postage stamp, included a variety of this stamp that appears to be a coil, perforated horizontally. Card collectors are already puzzled by this item. So are stamp collectors. Mostly stamp collectors, I would think. Especially. Card collectors probably don't know much about it.
Well, it was the card collector that caught it, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, they found on our website, in the show notes and directly from Topps, prominently features this strange stamp and can't seem to be found in the Scott catalog anywhere.
Yeah, it's...
What do you guys think?
What do I think?
About that stamp.
Well, I suppose it's possible that wherever they got their stamp stock from, there was a stamp in there or a sheet in there that they just said, hey, we need to cut these apart with scissors, and they did and didn't think anything of it.
No, I mean, but
that's possible.
The holder,
unlikely, but possible.
The holder spot. Because there's other pictures. It's commemorative size. It's a commemorative size spot.
Yes, but that particular commemorative would be taller than a normal commemorative is wide.
But then the top and bottom perforations would be cut off, not the side ones.
No, as the picture it shows the...
It's clearly a fake picture.
Yeah, it shows the stamp in sideways, so... The stamp is oriented, the normal stamp is oriented horizontally, it's a special size stamp, so they turned it on its side vertically, and so it would be wider than a normal commemorative stamp, but then they cut off the perforations on the sides, which doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think regardless of whether it's real or not, and hopefully it is an error, I think that would help.
Well,
it would
make sense if they were going to put it in a normal-sized commemorative holder that they would have trimmed off the top and bottom perforations when they turned it sideways to make it fit rather than the side perforations. It just looks weird.
It's too small.
It does.
It's too small. They photoshopped it in there.
It looks to me like they took the background from a legitimate coil stamp, erased out the artwork,
would they take the time to do that?
Because they didn't know what stamps they were putting in.
Because it's a marketing person and they had no idea about stamps.
They went on Google and they did a search. I need a 1982 stamp. And
they go to
Bing and they type in 1982 stamp and it's like, oh, there's a blue one. Okay, let's make it fit.
Why would they take the time to do this to this one when there's hundreds of 1982 stamps that they could have used?
Because they probably were doing it pre-production.
Looks like they went through the trouble to find commemoratives to put in these
cards.
Yeah,
but it was definitely not a stamp person that knew what they were doing.
No. But I will say, we were looking. The Babe Ruth card looks really great. It's got first bureau-ish, or not the first bureau, the baby banknote, I believe it is. 1 cent blue. And the one that I saw was very, very well centered, too. It was a really pretty stamp.
Too bad they didn't put the Babe Ruth stamp in with the Babe Ruth card.
But then it would be the wrong date.
I understand that. But I think it would still look cooler.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
predicting the future, they came out with a Babe Ruth stamp the day he was born.
Either way, it sounds like the card collectors, the baseball card collectors, are talking about the stamps more than they are the coin because of this particular thing. So that's a good thing to give us some exposure. Not us personally, but the stamp world more exposure. You know, and maybe as a collector, so they go, hey, that's pretty cool. If that's a rare stamp, I'm going to get that. And then, you know, maybe they get into stamps. You never know.
Well, in 3 days is the APS show. That will be cool if anybody has this on their table.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So as a baseball card collector, what do you think about this new series?
I mean, you know, since I deal with stamps every day and I am a baseball card collector, I would actually probably buy some of these. Definitely. I mean, I'd spend the money. I don't think I'd spend the time and the money opening all the boxes because I don't know what the odds are to get into one. But I would probably, if the price is right, get, you know, a Babe Ruth or a Lou Gehrig or, you know, Nolan Ryan or even...
You'd just pony up the money and buy one that somebody already found.
Yeah.
Like buying the inverted, the right side up Jenny sheet. Well, wait for somebody else
to find
it. I
don't think I'm going to spend that kind of money, but...
No, but it's the same concept.
Yeah, definitely.
You wait for somebody else to find it and decide they want to sell it.
Right.
But depending on how much... what the quantity of printing is. I mean...
Yeah, and all of that's not known at this point.
That's the biggie, yeah.
Well, that's the thing, is we don't know how many there are in the series. I mean, there's 50 different cards or 50 different players, but we don't know if there's 10 of each, if there's 5 of the Babe Ruth and 50 of the David Wrights, which makes a difference in the collecting. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
And also, I don't know how they would grade these.
Well, I think... they grade the card, I think they just kind of ignore the coin and the stamp.
Right.
Although they probably have to put a little bit on the condition of the coin and the stamp. I think the majority of the grade is going to be just reflected in the card itself, the centering, the sharpness of the corners, and that. On a normal card. But
I don't know. I think that they definitely would hit an eye appeal if you had a bad stamp or a bad coin.
Oh, I'm sure they would. But I don't think it's going to be a major hit.
Yeah.
So, in your experience, Danny, have you seen brand new out of the package cards sell for more than $100 a piece?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Really?
With the new. Personally, I don't buy anything that's anything after 1984 for baseball cards. I'm not into the inserts like this, but I mean, this is a pretty cool insert. But the only reason cards are worth what they are is because they're inserts now. The commons, they don't sell for anything anymore. It has to be an insert. It has to be rare. You know, and that's the only reason they probably stay in business is because of the inserts and the rare cards that they put inside those packets.
Oh, guaranteed, yeah.
Yeah, there was one guy talking about, from a card collector's perspective, he's sick of trying to assemble sets on his own. He's just going to let somebody else do it and buy the set on eBay.
Yeah.
It's too hard.
You probably spend a lot more money trying to do it on your own than you would.
Mm-hmm.
On eBay, you know, it's still pretty pricey to buy the set on eBay, you know, after someone else does it. But, you know, to open all those packets and you're missing two of the 50.
Well, not only that, you got all the extra stuff, and how are you going to get rid of
no,
it?
No one buys that.
Nobody
stuff
buys it.
Yeah.
Well, also the thing that I always see is you have to go to the baseball card shops to buy it. Because generally speaking, the postage on these things is more than the set usually sells for you.
No,
you can get fairly inexpensive sets.
No, I used to buy boxes of cards, and you just find yourself a distributor. You call them up, and you start placing orders. And you know, sometimes some distributors want to know if you have a shop or if you're in business, mm-hmm. and others don't care. They just sell you the product at a little bit over their wholesale cost, and they'll ship you a whole case.
Yeah. Hmm.
And instead of paying, you know, $5 a pack, you end up paying like $1.63 or something like that a pack. And it's a lot more cost effective if you're going to do the searching for all these inserts.
Well, that's what they did with magic cards.
Yeah.
I was thinking of a magic card analogy with that.
But it's the same thing.
Buying
the whole
box?
Yeah. Buying a case instead.
Oh, yeah, I'll buy a whole case. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can buy a booster box that has 36 packs in it with 15 cards in a pack. And I remember when I was actively collecting, to complete a set, you had to have a decent amount of friends willing to trade for the things that you didn't have. And you usually had to buy, like, two boxes. So 36 is 72 packs of 15 cards, and there's only 200 cards in a set.
But when you're talking about sets, commons for baseball card sets are nothing. You can go pick those up for $20 for the 2015.
Yeah, except
it's the insert sets.
Right. Because Magic and baseball cards are different. Magic has two uncommons and a rare, whereas inside of a baseball pack, everybody has the same number. Three uncommons? Three uncommons and a rare. In a baseball card set, you have the same odds of getting every single guy. They're all printed in exactly the same numbers. So really, they have the pack of cards with one rare in it. I cannot see how it's difficult, though, to find out which packs have the rare card in it, because the one they were looking at has a nickel. How do you hide the fact that there's a nickel inside of a pack of cards?
Or a quarter.
Or a quarter,
any kind of coin, because it's going to have more weight.
A lot more weight.
Danny, I know how to find them. Go find a pocket metal detector and sit there at Walmart.
There used to be a trick where, and me and my buddies used to do this, we'd go to Walmart or Target and open up all their new boxes, and it was, I think it was either the top right and the bottom left always had the inserts in it, because you can open 20 packs in a hobby box of 36, or 34 packs in a hobby box of 34 packs in a hobby box of 36, and not get one single insert, and there are 34 of those packs. So there used to be a trick to the trade. I'm sure they figured it out, but it was like the top right and the bottom left. So you'd go to Walmart, or you'd go to Target, or you go wherever, and it was always open, and there was always only two packs missing out of them, and you knew you're not buying packs from that box.
Another collectible, Disney Vinylmation little 3-inch collectible figures. Tom's shaking his head.
I was going to bring up that exact same thing.
They had the same problem when they started out. Some of those little suckers are, you know, worth $600, $700 a piece now. But it used to be where one person would buy a case, and there were 20 in a case. No, 24. And that first person would go, okay, the rare one, of which there's only one in the box.
Which is a surprise release, so you don't know which one you're looking for when you first buy it.
Is third one over from the top, second one down. That's always the rare one. And so you'd see all these boxes ripped open with that one always gone. And then they had a serial number on the bottom that you could start to figure out, okay, this one is always this serial number. And they had to change that pretty quick.
That's funny.
They even did that. They did some of their pin sets were like, they called them reveal conceal.
Oh, yeah.
Where you could see one, but there was one in a plastic bag behind it that you couldn't see. There were a couple sets they released where they put the same concealed pin in the box of the reveal pin every single time. So if the one popular concealed pin was out there and people figured that out, they would buy all of the one revealed pin, and you'd never find the concealed one, because they'd all be gone because they were all the same all the time.
You knew if Ariel was on the front, you were guaranteed a bell in the back kind of thing.
Something like that.
Hey, I got a question, Scott. Why do you think, I mean, besides the fact that there's so many of them, why do you think sports athletes never really caught on to the collector's world for stamp collectors or even card collectors?
Oh, you mean like sports stamps?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's Roberto Clemente stamps, there's Lou Gehrig stamps, you know, I didn't know there was a whole set.
What are you talking about? They caught on big time.
Well, I haven't seen any sent to us.
Well, that's a different kind of market. There's different kinds of most of that stuff is modern, and there's just a lot of it out there. And for the modern, there's really no need for most things to be expertized,
right?
So
you just get
so that leaves grading, and grading hasn't gotten into that part of the market yet.
The Babe Ruth stamp. Now this we haven't received any for a very long time, but there was one dealer who submitted 275 of them, or
and some Jackie Robinsons
and Jackie Robinsons, and, and they all went into the baseball card, you know, the sports memorabilia.
Yeah, they
market.
Went into the sports market and just disappeared out of the philatelic market completely. And I mean,
because I would figure it'd be the same. Like, yeah, I mean, that be wouldn't the same be a thing bad as grading a card.
That wouldn't be a bad thing to do if you want to make a few dollars on eBay. Go buy some sheets of Babe Ruth or Roberto Clemente or Jackie Robinson, or, you know, just pick a subject or a person. And
That's why the baseball stamp is so valuable.
The 885?
885. It's a valuable stamp, whereas the stamp before it and the stamp.
You mean
after it?
You mean 955?
955. What was 855? I don't know.
885 is like a famous American stamp.
Yeah, something like that.
And that's why I'm not an expert. And it's usually not an
Danny's disclaimer.
Anyway, the baseball stamp. And a plate block of the baseball stamp, I believe, is $15. And the stamp before it and the stamp after it are discount postage.
That's 855, not 955.
Whatever.
My bad.
Wait, so was I right?
You said 885.
You said 885.
Oh.
You were close.
Yeah, numerically you were closer.
Oh, well, I know it's.
But I think with the sports stamps, it's like the cards in the sense that there's common stuff. When they print a billion with a B of a certain stamp, it's not rare unless you've got a 98 or a 100.
Right.
Well, there was a great story, in baseball cards, and I collected baseball cards too. When Gary Sheffield's rookie card came out, everybody said that's going to be the key card. Everybody should buy it. And it hit the market and was selling for $50, and very quickly it went to $2. And like a couple years later, they said, "Hey, you said that this was going to be a valuable card." And he goes, "Yeah, but I didn't expect Topps to print 500,000 of them."
Right.
So, it's what I forget the gum company's name, but they printed the Babe Ruth baseball cards. Goody, I think it's Goody. Goody, that's it. And the Babe Ruth card is just as common as the Torch Bordson card. And Torch Bordson is worth $16, and Babe Ruth is worth $4,500. And it's all demand. It's not supply, because the numbers are exactly the same for both of them. It's all the story.
Okay, this week's in stamp collecting history, stamps from Alderney honor the 150th anniversary of the publication of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. Early this year, on January 6th, Great Britain's Royal Mail also issued stamps marking the 150th anniversary. I also found a blogger dedicated to this 150th anniversary. The address is ozpostcardproject.blogspot.com. And you can email her your depictions of the anniversary, or better yet, you can mail them to her post office box in Morocco, and I'll post the address on our blog. Let's move on to updates. Let's start with Cash's corrections. What do we have today?
Well, it's not a correction, but it's something that I saw that was interesting while I was looking at some duck stamp certificates, and I never knew. The artists signed the duck stamps, and then they drew a little duck in the margin, and it said they're called remarques.
It's just remark.
Remark, but it's spelled R-E-M-A-R-Q-U-E.
Yes.
And I thought that was just a cool thing, because now I know a new word for something that I have never seen before.
Actually, it's for additional artwork in the selvage, but it does not necessarily have to be by the artist who did the stamp. It's just additional artwork.
So it's a remark spelled in the French way, but it doesn't have words.
Well, we don't. You pronounce the word differently, emphasis on a different part. It's remark.
I was just going to say that. That's what it feels like.
Oh, yeah.
It's not remark. A remark. It's a remark.
Okay. Because they've remarked their stamp.
And a lot of times, especially on the U.S. duck stamps, when you find remarks like that, a lot of times, especially for the older ones, you will find that a different artist has done the artwork in the selvage and signed it, and usually in in dedication to or in memory of or something like that, because obviously the older artist may have passed or is unable to do additional or even unwilling to do additional artwork. But that happens because it's more of a modern type of fad, I guess.
Yeah, I remember seeing duck stamps like that in the Kelleher auction, I believe it was, a couple auctions ago. And they had some fantastic duck stamps with additional artwork added in. But I never saw them call it remark or remark.
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 Well, I think the best one, that the one that I liked the most is one that I saw. It was for C18, the Baby Zeppelin for the Century of Progress. Had a huge corner margin selvage, and whatever artist added the remark made it look like the image from the stamp was continued out, and you had this panoramic view of part more of Chicago and all of that in the background of the Zeppelin.
Oh.
And it was really, really cool. And he matched the color of the printing ink absolutely dead on.
Oh, that sounds great.
It was really cool.
Century of Progress off into the margin. That's neat.
I had one across my desk recently on a duck stamp that had a black Labrador on it with a duck in its mouth. I can't remember which number it is.
RW26.
But I didn't realize it was a remark when I looked at it. I didn't know what that was yet, actually. And I did a double take because I went to check the bottom of it through an eyepiece and went, wait a minute, how? No, I'm looking at the top. What? Because they reproduced the same artwork in the selvage, and it looked every bit as good, if not better, than the actual stamp, because it was done in, it looked like acrylic by hand, and it was beautiful.
Wow. Well, the remarks that, like I said, were in this Kelleher auction, they were fantastic artwork. You know, and, you know, we get into, I know we're going to talk about first day covers, and I see a lot of first day covers where, you know, they did the hand painting and stuff like that. I've seen it on the stamps rarely, and I never knew that it had a name. So that was something that I learned today. And the second thing I learned was that you should never ask a girl how much she weighs, because weight depends on the gravitational pull of the planet she's on. You should ask how massive she is.
You just made something sound and so much worse.
And on that note, we invite all of our listeners to correct Cash.
Okay, so our expert topic this week is inspired by a listener question. Because our recent comments of there being a lack of a first day cover on our favorite topics, we had a Facebook message asking how someone can make their own FDCs. So I guess let's start from the beginning. What is an FDC?
First day cover. It's basically a stamp on a envelope that is canceled on the first day of issue.
On the first official day of issue.
Official day of issue.
They go back all the way to U.S. number one. You can have a first day cover. Because it would be issued on the first official day that it was issued. U.S. number 10s are the same way.
Show me a number one on cover, first day cancel.
I don't know. I'm sure one probably exists somewhere.
Nobody's found one yet.
Oh, okay. I know number 10s are, there's about 15 of them. Great Britain
number one definitely has first day on number one, but not yet for U.S.
Oh, okay.
That doesn't sound cheap.
Oh,
they're not.
Well, for, you know, I collect 1851 to 1859, so I see them, and a really ratty one came up to auction recently, and it went for like $3,200.
Wow.
For just an awful-looking, terrible one. And for a while, they were up in like the $10,000 range. But that would be cool if you could find a U.S. number one on
the
first day.
Well, you also, when you're reading the catalog, a lot of times they don't specify an official date of issue, because a lot of the early stamps, that was never actually recorded what day they were placed on sale. And so a lot of times you'll see EDU, earliest documented use, or EKU, earliest known use. And those are frequently listed in the catalog where an official first day of issue date is not known.
Yeah, I had a number 85 that was earliest known date because they didn't know when they issued them.
And there are people that actively search for these issues with earlier dates to see if they can get the earliest one. And there are actually people that collect earliest known uses on these older stamps that don't have official first days.
So I think what we're talking about usually for FDCs, for the normal collector, is the earliest or is first day covers that are of philatelic nature.
Yes, and generally they're collected with cachets. And depending on the type of cachet, who made the cachet, can make some of these very unique and in some cases very valuable. Some artists would produce 10, and they would do they would hand draw on the envelopes an identical design, but each one is going to be unique in and of itself because they're all hand done. And other times they would do 10 and they would be all different designs. And so I think some of the most desirable ones are painted or watercolored in by the artist or colored pencils. There are standard ones like Artcraft and Fleetwood and some big companies that do first day covers, and they print their cachets on the cover. Those are generally most common and the least expensive.
There was an article in the ASDA magazine, which is, in my opinion, one of the best magazines done today. It's probably the best magazine done today. And they had a...
Here in the United States.
I haven't...
Well, because you don't read...
Togo may have this fantastic philatelic magazine.
But you don't know. So you can't say it's the best. You have to say it's the best one here.
Okay, the best one that I have seen, and I've seen a lot. But they had an article on Artcraft, which is probably the largest first-day cachet maker. And they were talking about all the evolution of their first cachet. And their first cachet, which now I'm looking for, is for the New York World's Fair. Because they were making a first-day cover, and I forget what the first-day cover was for. And then the New York World's Fair opened up, and they said, oh, quick, do one of these. And so the Artcraft's first cachet is the New York World Fair. Now I've got something to look for. Because that's a high... You know, after that, Artcraft becomes, you know, the master of cachets.
Yes, and they do most or all of their cachets are done with engraved recess printing.
Mm-hmm. That's what made them famous in the beginning. Yeah.
So I was reading that the preferred envelope size is a size 6 or 6 inches by 3 or 6 and a quarter inches wide.
6 1/4 by 3 3/8 or something like that.
Well, that's with all covers. Nobody likes legal size covers because they don't fit in their book.
They're hard to store.
They're hard to store, so like the smaller covers.
And they take up more space on an exhibit page.
Yep.
So the smaller personal envelopes are generally what people prefer, and so that's generally what you see the mass producers use.
Which is also a reason why nowadays you see the Farley souvenir sheets on first day cover. And they go for super high, you know, totally unexpectedly high prices. And it's because nobody stored them. I mean, if they did store them, you know, they put them in a box somewhere and they got all messed up. So finding these souvenir sheets, I saw one go in auction for like $250, just a normal, but it was nice.
Wow.
And yeah, so that is the correct size because people like keeping their stamp collection in a book instead of, I don't know, what do you store legal size envelopes in?
Well, Jessica and I have a
banker's box.
A folder, a banker's box.
We have a photo album, non-acidic, no adhesive. It just, you'd tuck your pictures in that holds that size letter perfectly, but we'd have to use a 12-inch scrapbooking album if we wanted to store legal size. Mm-hmm. So that would just get unruly, I think.
This is totally off the subject, but I just, at the last Anaheim Stamp Show at Steve Patillo's table, he had a photo album. And it was one of the ones where the plastic sticks to the page.
Oh, no.
Well, all the sticking adherence had all worn away. But it left this sort of wood grain pattern on the back of all the covers. And, you know, he wanted like $50 for it. And it's like, wow, these all look nice from the front. And then you turn them over. It's like, oh God.
Yeah, it dried out and it just... No longer adhesive, but it's dried out and stained.
Yeah, exactly.
And there may be a way to get that off, but I wouldn't know that off the top of my head.
Some chemical somewhere will do something.
So why do stamp collectors prefer unaddressed versus addressed?
Well, because if it's addressed, it's to a specific person. And if you're not that person, it's kind of weird.
I have a difference of opinion. I think that everybody likes to buy something that they think they are going to resell for a profit. So everybody tries to predict what other people will buy. And I think that for the 1920s on, people think that people will want unaddressed first day covers. I don't really think that there is a big desire. I think it's an expectation rather than a desire.
Well,
because if you go to pre-areas, I mean, you're not going to find a U.S. number 10
for many,
unaddressed.
No. True. But for many years, the big cachet makers like Artcraft and Artmaster and these others, they'd sign you up for a subscription service, and they would actually send your first day covers through the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess sometime in the 70s, they stopped doing that.
Oh, no, they still do it. They still do it.
They still do it?
Yep.
But you can get unaddressed ones.
Yeah.
And I know they keep them in reserve for returns, ones that are damaged in the mail. And apparently they just dump the rest of them. After a certain amount of time, they dump all the unaddressed ones on the market. Or you can request unaddressed ones.
I've seen Fleetwood. I believe it was Fleetwood. And I saw the application form, and you put your address down, then they have a box. And they, you know, check here if you don't want your address on your first day covers. And if you put a check mark there, they don't print it on.
Yeah, they send it under a different cover.
But I think that...
And your first day cover actually doesn't go through the mail.
Well,
exactly.
So people who have unaddressed, technically, that cover has never gone through the mail.
Right.
Whereas if it does have an address, you know, it has. And on the other side, if you're signing up for one of these companies, you go, wow, this is addressed to me. This is my name on this cover. I'm immortalized on this first day cover. So I think that it's more of a perception than it ever actually is a desire. It's a demand item, not a supply item, although that doesn't really work.
Yeah. Another thing is a lot of the earlier first day covers that were done by the services are all hand addressed in somebody's mm-hmm. handwriting. And if they had messy handwriting, it makes the cover look messy.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And that's another thing. If you have a clean cover, no address on it, it's clean and it's neat looking.
Well, in Europe, very, very...
I've seen them with labels.
Yeah. In Ireland, there was some service, and they were producing a huge amount in the 50s and the 60s. And it would be a very small band across the bottom. It typed on the envelope. And it would look just like almost part of the design or the cachet, but it was the person's address.
Hmm. And I've also seen them on removable or peelable labels. Yeah. Where you get it through the mail and you peel it off. And I've seen them where they've left the label on and it's discolored. Now you have a discolored box because the label is the adhesive's dried out and it fell off.
Yeah.
But now you have this brown box on the front of your cover.
I've seen that.
I think that's less desirable than actually having a handwritten address.
Yeah.
Well,
but I've also found
damaged.
Ones where the label is still nice and fresh and you peel it off and there's no residue and no evidence.
Well, here comes the second question, which...
Oh, I was just going to say that when I was first researching this topic, I asked my local post office, you know, hey, I want to make this cover with the cachet and the stamp, whatever. And I'm like, can you cancel for me and give it back to me? They're like, no, if I touch it and it comes by the counter, it has to go back and be mailed.
Oh, wow. At least you got an explanation.
That's actually not correct.
Yes. I had to deal with this, too.
There is a provision in the domestic mail manual that allows for handback service.
It's actually in section 50.1 or 2, one or the other. And I had to bring this up to some people. I did Carmageddon covers. And I took them in, and I handed it to the person. They said, well, you can't hand them back. You know, or I can't give them to you back. They have to go through the mail. And I said, okay, fine. You know, here I addressed them in pencil and, you know, really lightly, and I got them all. But now when I do it, I carry in a piece of the provision. And if you give them more than either 25 or 50, I don't remember what the number is, they'll charge you a surcharge.
50.
50. Mm-hmm. They'll charge you an extra amount to hand them back. But otherwise, if you walk up and you say, here, cancel this to me, and then hand it back, and they say no, you whip it out and give it, show it to them, and they go, oh, okay, fine. You know, you'll probably have to ask for the postmaster, you know, the manager or something. They don't give a crap.
You have to throw the book at him, basically?
Yeah.
Well, just show him where it is.
I mean, it's the same thing. I asked for a pre-cancel permit at one point, and they had no clue what I was asking for, so I had to bring in a copy of that section of the manual and give it to the postmaster, and then I had to go away, and they called me after he had read it, then gone and looked it up to make sure that it wasn't something I'd made up, and he matched it to – And he was really unhappy that he had to do it because it was extra work for him.
Oh, no.
But in the end, I got my pre-cancel permit.
Hey, I don't want to do extra
work. And
they
actually took the form that I submitted and just cut out my thing and laminated it for me. And that was my pre-cancel permit card.
Okay, so if you do that, are you going to get a decent, real cancel on it, or are they just going to pen cancel it and be like, meh, here you go?
No, they use the, you tell them what you want. You tell them that you want a round date stamp.
Well,
when
I did my first I got through the little photo stamps.
Mm-hmm.
I got them for my first kid, Sean. And so Sean had his own first day cover. And I took him in.
When he was born?
When he was born. So I have
my stamps canceled
for the day he was born. And I didn't want to argue with them, so they said they have to go through the mail. So I said, well, can I just put them in an envelope and mail them? And they said, sure. So all I did was I bought an over-the-counter envelope, shoved all my envelopes inside that envelope, and mailed them off. You know, now that's something that, you know.
They still canceled the internal ones, though?
Yeah, they canceled the internal ones, shoved them in an envelope, and then put the envelope through the mail. I don't know what realm of logic they were dealing in there. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, you know, once you just scratch the surface. But it's like, hey, you're the post office. You know, I'm not expecting great things from you. Here, do whatever you want. Just give me my stuff back.
Oh, they were punishing you.
Yeah.
They're not going to make it easy. You want us to do that? Okay, you're going to wait.
So, yeah, but Sean has first day covers.
So the address I found, if you want to mail them in and have them canceled and mail them back to you, is the Stamp Fulfillment Services Cancellation Services, P.O. Box 499992, Kansas City, M.O.
Missouri.
641-44992.
That's a lot of nines.
It is. It's mostly nines.
Well, the last four, just the last four are the P.O. box.
Yeah.
Oh.
My P.O. box is the same way.
So, but the other neat thing about older first day covers versus newer first day covers is the older first day covers were canceled on the first day.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And now you have 30 or 60 days, 45 days, something like that, to send them into the book after the stamp is issued to request them from the post office.
Right.
And the post office will actually sell them to you during that period. You don't even have to send them an envelope. They charge you a little bit more for it, but they have different, you know, sometimes they'll have a digital color postmark, which is of their own design, and it's usually a pictorial cancel, and it's in color. And they actually print it on a laser jet printer, and those are manufactured. That's the Postal Service's cachet.
Well, you can buy first day covers from the fulfillment center.
Or you can just get the standard machine cancel type with first day of issue in the killer bars.
Yep.
So you mean to tell me the last show I was at where they had a stamp ceremony that I didn't have to run to the counter at 5:59 p.m., 10 seconds before they closed, to make sure I bought an official first day cover?
Well, here's my – what I
– You didn't have to.
Here's what they do in the coin – you know, I steal everything from the coin industry. Here's what the coin industry does that I think we can do in the stamp industry is that – and this is particularly for duck stamps. Duck stamps have their duck ceremony. And then you purchase the duck stamps at the ceremony. And then you get them certified as first day of issue because you'll have the receipt. You'll have that they were purchased at the ceremony. And these are the first day issue of that stamp, just like they do in the coin industry where they have the first strike, although they had to clean up their act a little bit to better define what first strike was. I think that we could very easily do that in the stamp industry, and you can have first day stamps that were purchased at the ceremony. These are the first stamps of this issue that are legitimate for postage.
You know how you do that? You get a stamp program, and you have somebody who up there on the stage at the ceremony sign your program. That's how you verify that stamp was right there on the first day.
Yep.
That's a good idea. So, originally, they recommended that you put...
Just let him out near the door.
I'll say that anyway. So, originally, they recommended that you have a filler card inside your FDC when you mail it. But the new ones I've seen don't have anything in them.
Well, yeah, it's just to make it so that it's stiffer when it goes through the services so they don't get banged up. I see that all the time, too.
Oh, a lot of the 3x5 cards were advertisements for more first day covers in the earlier ones and philatelic tools and stuff like that.
I actually have three of them that I kept for no particular reason other than the filler card was for our real estate company. And the real estate company sent through these first day covers and they used their real estate and it was some real estate company in Washington, D.C. And they kept it for... their stiffener, and it was really cool because, you know, it's, I think it was from 1944, the Washington, D.C. real estate company stiffening a 1944 first day cover.
Cool. So, you guys ready to open the C3A?
Oh. I'll start the drum roll.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Drum roll, please. So, let's see.
I feel good about this one.
See, now that I know you can get stuff canceled and handed back to you, if I get one of those, I'm getting it canceled.
Up normal.
Aww. Yeah, I want the only known used copy.
Okay, you can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, stampshowht on Twitter, Facebook, stampshowheretoday, and our website, www.stampshowheretoday.com, with your questions and comments. You can now leave voicemails on our Google answering machine anytime. No one will pick up, it's just an answering machine. Country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to a Google Voice on our website so you can call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
I'm Liz Heisey with Women Exhibitors, talking on Stamp Show Here Today.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.